Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. This is the U.S. Soccer Send-Off Series Review Show tonight as the United States, they face a very tough Turkish side, and they defeat Turkey by a final of 2-1. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. We are 2 games down, and we got 1 to go as the United States will be heading down to Jacksonville, Florida to face Nigeria. But, of course, this was a solid victory for the United States against probably one of the most tougher sides not to go to the World Cup that comes from Europe. So it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen here with the United States when they face Nigeria. Of course, they feel facing Nigeria, which would be a solid counter, or shall we say an opponent that mirrors how Ghana plays. Some were asking during the press conference on Friday about how does Turkey basically mirror Portugal. And I don't know if it mirrors Portugal, but Turkey did prove to be a tough top side facing the United States in this friendly. And I thought there was a lot of very good play by the United States and the attacking side of things. Defending was a little bit off, I felt, but we just got to say that they came through. And once again, these results really don't matter right now. The result does not matter. While it's nice to see the United States playing well, doing well on the pitch, the point is it's more about chemistry, it's more a little bit more about morale, and it's a little bit more about confidence going out there. So right there and then, I thought the United States did well with the ball in the midfield. I thought they did well offensively, but my God, too many chances were allowed to Turkey in the defensive end of the field. But Tim Howard, they had a very good first half. Of course, subbed out into the second half was Brad Guzan. Unfortunately, there was a penalty towards the end of this game that the Turks decided to take over, and hopefully we'll see what happens as we move forward here during the show. Expecting my good friend Earl Reed to join me tonight as we review this show. Review the match that happened a couple hours ago. It ended about 4 hours ago. Going down to Red Bull Arena, seeing this match. And you just have to say right now, I think at this point in time, Jurgen Klinsmann, I think he has done a very good job so far with picking the opponents for this send-off series. Once again, there could be a bit of a question in the back line because, you know, Matt Beisler and Omar Gonzalez are normally together, but this time you got Jeff Cameron with Matt Beisler, and maybe that's a little bit off there with the chemistry. Joining me now, of course, from PhillySoccerPage.net is Earl Reed. And Earl, this result so far, I think we can take away the penalty. How did you think the USA fared so far against pretty tough Turkish side?
I thought they did okay. I mean, I thought they did better against Turkey than I expected them to do against Azerbaijan. I mean, I guess I think given my expectation of what they did, I think they did better today than what. I mean, they're still not quite there yet, but they definitely did better than, I mean, Azerbaijan was pretty weak, and, you know, there really wasn't much of a challenge there. I mean, the challenge was scoring goals, you know, through a defense that was, you know, troubling, you know, or a defense that was pretty stout against Azerbaijan. They put, you know, kind of packed guys behind the ball. Turkey actually wanted to play this game a bit, and I thought in the early going, Turkey was probably unfortunate not to get a goal. But after the U.S. scored, you know, that seemed to change the tide a bit, and they really didn't look back after that, although it did get a little bit hairy after some substitutions were made.
Mm-hmm. I will say this about Jurgen Klinsmann's 4-4-2, obviously, diamond formation by Klinsmann in the midfield, having Michael Bradley at the top of the diamond and you probably had Jermaine Jones at the bottom of the diamond. That, to me, seems like tinkering that is not a little bit more fluid. I think right now we're seeing the – I think they're solid. I think the starting 11 is a solid starting 11, but I think some of the intricacies, you're seeing some problems, and especially the back line, like I mentioned before you came on, Matt Beisler is so used to having Omar Gonzalez as his center back partner, and right now you have Jeff Cameron as a center back partner, and at the moment I think those two are not communicating well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a big part of why they weren't particularly strong in the early going. You know, it seemed like there was a lot of space there for Turkey to exploit, and if Turkey had been a little more clinical, U.S. might have found themselves down a couple of goals in the early going, especially, you know, the eighth-minute chance that I'm going to get his name wrong, Ozakup, and then in the 12th minute, Nuri Sahin. But they both had pretty good open shots, and in the 20th minute, another basically the striker, Erdvik, he also had a really good opportunity that went begging right in front. So they had several opportunities, Turkey did, to sort of take control of the match from the score standpoint. You know, U.S. was still playing to an extent possession, but they were getting hit on the counter pretty easily, and it didn't seem like you said, Beisler and Cameron. I think more Beisler, Matt Beisler was probably the weaker of the two on the day, and probably, you know, led to his being substituted in the match for John Brooks later in the mm-hmm. match. But I mean, this is something they're going to have to get sorted out. This is important. You know, Turkey, Turkey leads then to Nigeria, a team that's at, you know, in the World Cup. You know, then you have, you know, Ghana right after that. I mean, I guess they're going to play a Belgium friendly down in Brazil that's behind closed mm-hmm. doors, more of a scrimmage than a true friendly. But, I mean, the back line is something they really have to get solidified. Tim Chandler was good for most of the half or most of the game, but you know, you saw his weakness there at the end. Fabian Johnson looks great. You know, I think he's great there at right back, but he might be good at left back too. I don't know. I mean, these are things that are really going to have to get sorted out. And you only have one friendly, obviously a bunch of training. But, you know, Ghana, I mean, that's going to be the real deal when that comes on here in a couple weeks. And, you know, just hope that Jurgen Klinsmann can get this sorted out and, you know, get these guys communicating, you know, moving together as a line when you move forward, and whatnot. Because otherwise, I mean, it really could get ugly if they don't get to play better. I mean, I don't know this. Yeah, you know, I didn't think that it was a terrible game today. I thought they were pretty good compared to, you know, sort of like what I saw from Azerbaijan, and then finally, you know, expecting them to play against a better team in Turkey than what they saw previously. They did pretty decent, but they still have a lot of room to grow.
No, absolutely. There's plenty of room to grow. The one thing about Timmy Chandler, I will agree with you. I thought he was very strong out at left back today. I thought Timmy Chandler did a very good job handling the Turkish attackers. The one moment where I did not like from Timmy Chandler was – obviously there's like three, four minutes remaining in regulation, and it looked like he thought the match was over, but the Turks were still attacking because they wanted to break up the clean sheet that was going to be shared by both Tim Howard and Brad Guzan. Guzan, I thought, played a great second half. I thought Tim Howard played a very good first half. But Tim Chandler, in my mind, I think he felt the match was already over, and Turkey said, no, we're still fighting.
I mean, that's the way it looked. I mean, basically it looked like he played it a little nonchalant and got his pocket picked and, you know, really put his team, you know, in a bind. Guzan tried his best to, you know, get in front of the shot. Kind of did there at first, then the ball got away from him, and then he was kind of fumbling around there, and I forget who was the attacker there, but, you know, a shot hit Jeff Cameron in the right arm, and I believe it was the right arm, and
yep.
Clear penalty, you know, in a World Cup, that's a red card.
Oh, yeah.
You lose your defender not only, you know, you're not only going out of 10 men, but you lose Cameron for the next match. You know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of bad things come from that one poor decision if you're talking about the World Cup. I mean, in a friendly, you know, you could kind of slough it off. You know, this is something that, I mean, and I think this is the reason why I would be very cautious with Chandler. I mean, it's, yes, he did pretty well the rest of the game, but, you know, you can't be allowing your guard to be down in that kind of a situation, regardless of, I mean, these are auditions. I mean,
yep.
Suffice to say, you know, if DeMarcus Beasley's healthy, I mean, DeMarcus Beasley had his ups and downs against Azerbaijan, but, you know, Chandler probably for most of that game was looking like, you know, he might get another look in against Nigeria. Now, I don't know. I mean, that, you know, that's, and given the fact that Chandler is a guy who kind of bowed out there in the qualifying process, you know, didn't seem to have the guile in order to say, well, I'm going to go and fly halfway across the world to help out my country in important qualifiers. And then you're not going to sacrifice on a ball and try to make sure that you at least play that to the touchline or, you know, be a little bit more diligent as far as protecting it. You know, it's just it leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth. And, you know, maybe I'm being hypercritical of Tim Chandler, but, you know, this is a guy that I think we all see a lot of talent, and it's these types of little mistakes that are going to prevent, you know, him becoming the next great right back or left back or whatever he decides. I still think he ought to be at right back. You know, if you're going to play Chandler, why not flip-flop him and Fabian Johnson? I mean, I guess you saw what Johnson could do if he's on his favored foot from the right. You know, he gets a goal in this one. But tactically speaking, you seem to be better off when you can have a guy on his left foot playing left back who could kind of curl a ball up the touch line and widen the field, swinging balls. Especially, honestly, especially in a formation that's as narrow as like a diamond formation,
a lot of times
you're talking about narrowness, and you need those fullbacks to overlap.
Nope, absolutely, you're absolutely correct on that one. Let's talk about that goal. Great give and go by Fabian Johnson with Michael Bradley. I'll be honest with you right now, Earl. I think Fabian Johnson should be the right back for this national team right now going forward. When they head down to Jacksonville and then afterwards going to go to Brazil, because I think Fabian Johnson right now works very well with what the flow of the game showed. At the same time, that little give and go with Michael Bradley, and when he pounded that ball just inside the far post to get the first goal of his U.S. national team career, fantastic work with Fabian Johnson and Michael Bradley. That's definitely going to work a lot if the U.S. does well when they have possession and when they're attacking Ghana's side of the field.
He definitely seems to have a better sense of distribution and, you know, making himself available. Obviously, that play was a stellar play probably the highlight of the match as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, you aren't going to see much prettier passes than what you saw from Michael Bradley on that, just lofting it over. Now, I was on a friend's show this afternoon, Ata Dizdar, and he follows the Turkish league. He was pointing out that the two center backs for Turkey were not necessarily traditional center backs. One, the guy who was beaten over the top as well, and it was the same back who misplayed on the other goal. You know, he's more of a left back that's been tried to be converted into a center back by Roberto Mancini at, I believe it's Bursaspor. So he had a Galatasaray, I forget which. He's the Turkey guru. I'm not so much, but anyway. So, you know, this is a case where, you know, but I mean, still, it was an awesome pass. And, you know, maybe an experienced center back would have sensed the run coming from Johnson, but you can't take anything away from them. That was a great sequence. I think what I like about Johnson as well is he has recovery speed, that, you know, he gets caught upfield. And you saw this a few times. He did get caught upfield in the attack. And, you know, against a guy like Cristiano Ronaldo, it's going to cause problems if you don't have either recovery speed or you just, you know, you may just have to pin him back if he's playing on the left, you know, as a left winger. So,
yep.
You know, Johnson's really going to have to be mindful when you get to a team like Portugal that has, you know, a really strong wing presence. But, you know, he does have recovery speed, and I think he knows how to play some good, you know, recovery defense, be able to pick out the ball, try to, you know, slow the guy down a bit and, you know, not get called for a silly foul, which I think is, you know, I think you saw Yedlin get called for that on occasion, or Jermaine Jones can get, you know, picked up on a cheap foul. But Johnson seems to be a little bit better in, you know, kind of easing his way around there and picking the ball out when, you know, he needs to either make up some ground or, you know, just if he's in position and just needs to, you know, take something out.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I also think I also believe with that whole setup with when they're going to face Portugal, you know, that's going to be a very, very tough thing to do when you have a great player like Ronaldo who's going to go out there, and he's definitely going to cause all sorts of problems for the back line, especially the right back or whichever side the field is going to be on. It could even be the left back. You never know. But definitely Ronaldo's going to cause some problems. Maybe that's why D'Andre Yedlin, who I thought he had a pretty good match subbing in. Obviously, he's probably going to be playing on the national team as a substitute, depending on what the situation calls for. But I thought Yedlin had a very good match. The one foul he got called for, I mean, I'm going to have to agree with him. I didn't think it was much of a foul. I thought it was shoulder-to-shoulder challenge, and the referee blew his whistle pretty early.
I mean, you're probably right. I don't know. I mean, Ronaldo is, you know, probably a top three player in the world. So you're going to have to come up with a specific game plan for him. And, you know, it's going to be tough to know whether or not, you know, Portugal's coach decides to flip-flop him from side to side to try to find weaknesses or to try to confuse the defense. You might see that. But, you know, Yedlin is a guy who's, you know, I don't know how much time he's going to get playing in Brazil unless there's, like, an injury or something. I would hope that, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann is more inclined to use his three subs towards, you know, attacking options, trying to either, you know, change into an attacking formation or try to change the midfield in order to be a little bit more pragmatic and defensive to try to protect the lead. You know, usually I don't think you'd want to switch your fullbacks a whole lot. So, but I mean, this is great experience in these friendlies for D'Andre Yedlin. You know, I don't think this is going to be his World Cup, but, you know, maybe in 4 years in Russia, this is the experience that's going to get him to that next level, and then you'll see him, or, I mean, there's other right backs in the fold that we don't have in this squad, but, you know, just giving him a chance to experience the national team setup. And, you know, so far he's done pretty well, but I don't know as you want to give the keys. It'll be interesting to see. You know, if he performs well enough, you could see Fabian Johnson being the guy on the left wing, like we talked about before, going up and playing like a left midfield and, you know, pushing a Brad Davis or, you know, Alejandro Bedoya out of the lineup. Or moving Bedoya to the right and pushing Zuzi out. So, I mean, you have a lot of options there with Johnson, but it looks to me like Johnson is probably right back, like you were saying, and, you know, Yedlin will just be there in just in case there's some kind of an injury or, you know, foul situation, you know, discipline, red card, yellow card accumulation, whatever.
Yes, absolutely. We'll see what happens there. You know, I want to talk about Clint Dempsey for a minute. And even though, thankfully, he was ready to go, he had tightness in the groin, couldn't go in San Francisco at Candlestick Park against Azerbaijan, I made this reference that, you know, the national team looks to be ready for against Turkey, but Clint Dempsey looked like he was Azerbaijan ready, meaning not to be, you know, negative on Clint, which I'm not, just to say the way he played out there, he kind of lacked a little bit of the fitness because obviously, you know, the chemistry wasn't there against Azerbaijan. Even though the chemistry was there for the boys in Turkey, it just looked like Clint Dempsey was a little behind. But other than that, I thought he had a great match. Before we even talk about that goal, how about that sick move he made in the first half? I mean, we've seen nutmegs before, but my God, it was a spin with a nutmeg off the back heel past defender, and he went right at the net. Even though nothing got converted, that was a hell of a move by Dempsey, who looked really, really sharp after that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of like almost a 1 in 10 chance that, you know, I mean, that's basically no look. He's just trusting that the legs are going to be apart and, you know, pulls it through. quite an amazing little move there. Yeah, I would agree. I think his you know, he's still trying to get his fitness up to the level that you're seeing some other players. You know, the one play that sticks out from this match with me, or for me, is he was in space running at goal. A defender caught up to him, and somehow, I mean, it almost looked like Dempsey may have initiated the contact. Rather than taking a shot from 18 yards, or 20 yards or whatever, or just kind of like burning away and trying to take on the keeper, he sort of like slowed it down a little bit, anticipated the contact, went down easy. The ball ended up being, you know, the keeper, who I didn't think had a great game for Turkey, kind of juggled a little bit, came back to Dempsey again, and he took a shot that the keeper saved. And it seemed to me almost like he had a chance to actually do something with it and get that goal. And instead he kind of, I don't know what you would call it, but didn't attack the goal with the ball. Instead, he sort of let the defense attack him, trying to get a foul or something like that. So I'd like to see him, you know, especially in the friendly. I mean, you're not looking to get cards or, you know, I mean, I guess you could look to get penalties, but, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, you'd rather see the guy try to actually take him on. I mean, Clint Dempsey has I know he has the tools to be able to do that. You know, just do it. Don't try to look for, you know, sort of the, I don't want to say the cheap way out, but it kind of felt like that way at the time.
Right. Absolutely. I understand where you're coming from. Don't worry. I know exactly what you're saying. But I will say this, you know, look, everyone's always going to find a way to get the referees on their side, and this is, you know, the sportsmanship, the gamesmanship, unfortunately, side of things. But you have to say that for the for the USA, I thought they did very well. I thought that they were able to go out there and to do a job, and so far so good. USA at the moment is looking pretty good so far, going 2-for-2 so far in the send-off series. But that goal, without any doubt, that goal for Dempsey was basically a gift. Nice cross from the near side, and I really thought the defenders for Turkey should have done better with it. I've never seen such a bad flub by such a very good side from Europe, and Dempsey, all he had to do was just basically toe poke it in, and he did.
Well, yeah, and again, the defender, I'm trying to pull up the, well, I have it here, Balta was his name, the left center back. He just sort of whiffed on it, and being a left back, I mean, even being a left back, you would expect a defender to have enough wherewithal and quality and knowledge to be able to clear a ball off the line like that or just in front of his keeper. And instead he sort of half whiffed on it, and you know, that was all she wrote as far as it came right to Dempsey, and he tapped it in. And yeah, I mean, it sort of left you feel a little bit cheap, like it was a cheap goal for the U.S. And, you know, I think if Turkey wouldn't have come back to, you know, get the penalty, you know, you might have thought it was no big deal. But, it, you know, it kind of leaves you in this match feel like maybe it was more of a draw because, you know. But, that, but yep. Then, you know, after this match I thought about it, and it's like, you know, I started saying to myself, well, you wouldn't see a mistake like that in a World Cup. And then, but then you think back to 2010 and the England match and Rob Green bundling a ball over his own line. And, you know, so you definitely do see mistakes on a huge stage, you know, under big pressure. So, you know, for what it's worth, you take the goal any way you can get it. I believe the cross was in from Brad Davis, I believe, on that. That he sort of scuffed along, and Dempsey was right there. So I think that's how it went. I'm trying to remember. Should take
yeah, no, that's how it went. Brad Davis finds, I think it was Chandler who made the cross, and then all of a sudden,
Chandler made the cross. Yeah,
it was Chandler who made the cross, and then the two defenders. It went off of, I think it went off the center, the left side center back, and then right to Clint Dempsey. And all I did was just poke it home past the keeper, and that was all she wrote on the U.S. side, or if we say on the Turkish side of things. That at the time was 2-0.
Yeah. I mean, it was – and, you know, that was just sort of like a culmination of what you felt like was the U.S. sort of building, you know, up to a goal like that. You know, they seemed like they were in pretty much in control. But, you know, when it came right down to it, they had trouble finishing, generating opportunities for, I mean, Altidore did have a few, but, you know, he's a guy that you are still waiting to turn it back on, and, you know, he's just struggling. It's a big struggle right now for him.
It is. It really is, and I really feel bad for Josie because I know for a fact that Altidore can play well. He can score goals. I really believe in Josie. I think he will get that opportunity. When it will come, we'll find out. Obviously, hopefully it's against Nigeria before they head down to Brazil. But to be honest, I will say it. I am getting a little worried for Josie, and I really want him to be successful, and I want him to go down there to play well, strong, and finally pot a couple of goals because he really needs to raise his confidence. And that's the one thing right now I'm a little worried about with Altidore is his confidence. And hopefully when they get down to – hopefully when they get to Jacksonville, he'll finally get that goal. You know, did you see when they disallowed that first – that goal that Josie swept in? They said there was a foul – that he shoved the keeper. I don't know if you saw that or not, but I wasn't sure if that was a real foul. Some are saying it was. I didn't see it. Maybe you did.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the points that I don't know. I think I saw somebody make it on Twitter, but I mean, this is something that you're gonna have to get used to. I mean, you know, we saw it in 2010 in the Slovenia match, a poor call and go against the U.S., sometimes you just have to rise above. Against Slovenia, you could say, well, you know, a couple defensive breakdowns, you know, if you keep those from happening, you win 2-0 or you win 1-0.
Right.
I mean, it's tough to play that game of what if, but, you know, it's easy to say and blame it on the referee, but, you know, it seems like referees' decisions get more and more anti-United States as you get towards the international level. You know, that's the way it seems to me. So I think you're going to see a couple bad calls. Now, I'm not sure Turkey was particularly happy today either. But then again, you know, you look at the foul numbers, the U.S. had 18 as opposed to Turkey, who had 11. So, I mean, you know, if you look at the stats of this match, you know, it doesn't look that great for the U.S. I mean, 23 shots to 8 in favor of Turkey, 7 shots on target for Turkey, 4 for U.S. I mean, granted, a lot of those came later in the game, but, you know, you just have to, you just have to say that this wasn't the greatest. You know, the U.S. is sort of back to playing a bit more of counterattack. I mean, you saw some space there for them in these matches, but I'm trying to remember back to what your original question was about, but in any regard, I mm-hmm. think that, you know, the refereeing, it was about refereeing. I think you're at the mercy of a lot of officials, and some of them are good, some of them are not so good, and so you kind of have to get used to it here, and you have to play to win regardless of whether or not you get a – and so for Josie, it's a tough call, but it's not uncommon to see, a referee from – I think the referee today was from Tunisia. You know, that he's going to – decide he's going to call a push in the box when a referee from England, like Howard Webb, let's say, might decide that he's going to let a lot of that stuff get away with that. So you have to know the referees and consider that, you know, and they've got stats out there for these guys. These guys, for the most part, haven't been refereeing in a box. I mean, to get to that kind of level, you have to either referee in qualifiers, in a, you know, like a, inter, you know, inter, cut, not intercut, maybe intra or intercontinental cups, things like that, Gold Cup,
right.
African Cup of Nations, yada, yada, Euros. So, I mean, you have stats out there. You just have to figure out if you've got a referee that's not going to allow much contact on corner kicks, then you have to figure out how to stay away from that, especially if you're the offense. I think a defender is going to be allowed to get away with a lot in the box typically, but especially like Koulibaly there in 2010, you know, he was calling a lot of hand checking and stuff by the offense, you know, or by the attacking players,
mm-hmm.
like on an attacking corner or attacking set piece. And so, you know, you would want to see if he has a history of that and decide, okay, well, we're going to have to, you know, limit the amount of contact we make. So I don't know. I feel bad for Josie because it was sort of, it would have been that goal to get him off the schneid, but, you know, he's got to keep working because otherwise, you know, time's running short. He brings some things to this team, but eventually Aaron Johansson is going to have to be given a chance up top, and, you know, we'll see when that happens.
To be honest with you, Earl, I got a funny feeling, and I'm like, you know, this is nothing against Josie. I want him to do well in the World Cup, but I'm telling you right now, I think Jurgen Klinsmann would make that move to bring in Johansson either as a replacement for Josie during a match or to say that he's going to start and he'll bring Josie off the bench. I think Klinsmann can do that. I think he will have the nerve to go out there, and if he doesn't like what he sees, he's going to go and he is going to make that move. I don't think he's shy of doing it. I think if he's going to do it, he'll do it.
Well, and if he's going to do it, he should do it against Nigeria. I really mm-hmm. think that he should pull the plug for the Nigeria match. Only in that you may find something that you can go to. Let's say you start Johansson and you plan that you're going to bring Josie off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
If it works, let's say you immediately find out, okay, Johansson can't bring the hold-up play that Josie brings. Okay. But Josie, when he comes off the bench, seems to be more energetic, seems to be able to expose defenders that are a little bit gassed. Has an easier time fighting for balls against defenders that are gassed, as opposed to when they're both at sort of the same strength. That's the time to try it. But the other thing that you could say is that maybe it's time to try a different formation, and they don't have a whole lot of forwards to be able to try things like switching up your formation and going with, let's say Johansson on one side, Dempsey on the other, and Altidore up top, and you go with more of like a 4-3-3 or a 4-5-1, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
You could try that. But, it's like these are the times. I know that there's a balance. You don't want to limit the amount of time you have in order to show how or to play a formation that you want to use against, real match opponents. You know what I mean? It's like if they want to drill the 4-4-2 diamond and get it ready, then you'd want to play that against live opponents and real opponents that are trying to.
Right.
So, I guess that's the one thing is you can't really go in and start tinkering with those tactics so much if you're going to go with one specific formation. And it seems like this team isn't tactically diverse enough to be able to kind of switch it up on the fly and say, okay, well, let's instead, throw Dempsey on the left. And, I mean, you could do that. Zusi's played winger for Kansas City. You could put Zusi on the right. Dempsey is a left wing kind of player and Altidore up top, see how it rolls. But, it seems like Klinsmann is pretty much wed to this idea at the moment. And as has been pointed out many times, he's almost like, what's he got to lose? You feel like since he signed an extension, it's not like he's really under a lot of duress to lose his job if they don't perform. So, be interesting to see, but I would expect Altidore. I'll tell you what, I think he will start against Nigeria, but I would be surprised if Johansson isn't brought in as a sub in the second half if Josie hasn't gotten a goal or possibly two. Just because I think you got to try it. I think you have to see what happens.
Right. And we'll see when it does happen. Once again, when the USA takes on Nigeria, maybe we'll see what he's going to do against Nigeria down in Jacksonville at Everbank Field, home of the Jacksonville Jaguars of the NFL. And we're going to see what they're going to do down in Brazil. And as the USA will be facing Ghana first, and then they'll be facing Portugal, and then against Germany. I thought Tim Howard made some good saves today. Nothing overly dramatic or drastic, you might say. I thought Brad Guzan had some more of the work in the second half as he came on. But one thing is for sure, goalkeeping is a strength for the national team, Earl. And once again, they're proving it here at Red Bull Arena, because I thought both guys played fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been the sort of the reputation of the United States, is that goalkeepers are the they have a lot of goalkeepers and, top quality, potentially world class. And so, and these guys play at, in the top division in England for a reason. I mean, you have other guys like Brad Friedel who have and are still going, served for the national team long ago and are still performing at the club level in England. So, although Friedel has been more on the bench here in the last year, you can't really complain much about the goalkeeping in these first couple of matches. Not that it seems like Howard hasn't had much to do. Guzan, yeah, he came in the second half, and while the first 10 minutes kind of went the U.S.'s way, after that it sort of swung fully in Turkey's favor, and Guzan had to be at his best.
Yeah, he really had to be at his best, and keep on going here. I think we have to look at this midfield a little bit more closer. Do you feel maybe if they went back to a flat 4-4-2 with the four in the midfield, just a flat 4-4-2, not going to this diamond formation, do you think maybe we wouldn't have maybe some of these worries in the midfield? I'd like to be honest with you. To me, Jermaine Jones looks more comfortable when he does have Michael Bradley next to him. And I understand the whole, we don't want to go back to the empty bucket formation and all that other baloney and stuff. But to be honest, I'm not really looking at that. I'm looking more like comfort level with the national team in the midfield. Do you think that they have a better comfort level at a flat 4-4-2 than the diamond in the 4-4-2?
I really think that the formation part of it isn't as important as how they're playing. You know, they're playing a lot of 1-2 touch ball. It was a little bit more direct today than what it had been. I think you saw more guys, taking the opponent head on as opposed to against Azerbaijan. I think with sort of a team sitting back behind the ball, you were able to try to ping balls and try angles and try to like move around guys that way, as opposed to in this case where I think they were just trying to exploit space on the wings for the most part. And so, you know, this whole thing about 4-4-2 diamond versus 4-4-2, you know, I think to an extent you're always going to have some, things are, there's several different phases to a style of play. And just about everybody uses what you would call, the two banks of four. And so everything kind of looks like a flat four when you're talking about, flat four midfield when you're talking about the defensive phase, when you're talking about, defending. You usually see Bradley. I mean, you might still see him push up a little bit further, but it tends to get flatter when you're out of possession trying to defend. Where you really see Bradley move up is in the attacking phase, and it's a thought, but I think the trouble when you go and do that is you have to become more of like a long ball team, because then you can't really link as well. Or you have to have, let's say, Dempsey drop into the space between the opponent's defense and midfield in order to get the ball, because, you're expecting Josie to sit right on that back line usually. So either you have Dempsey drop into space and you play the pass into him where he's got some space, or you try to play a long ball into Josie, have him hold it up and try to move your wings like Zusi or Brad Davis or whoever happened to be on the wings in that particular game, move up on the flanks, pass the ball out there and get that to them to run into space, hopefully. That's what you're talking about. And before I would do that, I would consider – I'm not sure what I would consider at this point. It's really a game of, do you want to expose your back four? Because I think the good thing, if you like you're talking about the empty bucket, the good thing about that is that you have two defensive midfielders or two more defensive. You have Bradley and Jones, who both have sort of a defensive aspect to their games, sitting back there and helping the defense. But if you were to say, let's say move Bradley, take Jones off, so move Bradley back into Jones's position, and then let's say bring on Mikel Diskerud to play as the attacking midfielder, he doesn't play as much in the defensive mode. And so then you only have one guy back there protecting, and then also Bradley can sometimes get forward, and then you end up having nobody back there protecting the back line. So, you know, the tactical aspects can be quite difficult to manage, and, I mean, that's why, obviously, Clemson makes the big bucks. I think what I would do is, because these guys have been practicing this, I would continue it, at least through Nigeria, see how it works against Ghana. Or if it looks like it's not connecting very well against Nigeria, maybe, yeah, try flattening it out in the second half or going to an empty bucket type formation and, you know, see if that gives you any more success. But I think what you're going to see is more counterattacking as you get closer to the World Cup, because I think these teams just keep getting better and better, and the teams, you know, become more confident in possession, which leaves the U.S. with less possession. And so you might be more willing to absorb pressure and try to break on a counterattack, which is something the U.S. traditionally has done very well.
Yeah, they really have. And obviously, as we go forward with this show here, as we're going to finish it up here very soon, but still, you know, Earl, just have to say right now, you know, I've been hearing, you know, obviously we hear when we talk to certain people that they're saying, oh, the Turks are ready to go and let the USA have it. Turkey's ready to go out there and play hard. And while the Turks did exploit several lanes to start this match, it just seemed like, I don't know, it just felt like that Turkey just couldn't get anything together. I mean, yeah, they attacked the USA well. They found open lanes. There was some scrambling going on with the back line. I mean, the midfielders had to come in and help out the defenders. That's no doubt about it. Just Turkey, once again, is a very solid side. But it just seemed to me that the Turkey just could not really get that final ball to do what they wanted to do, and that is to really get it past Tim Howard. Either it was at Timmy, or Timmy makes a great save. Same thing with Guzan. You know, it was either at him, an easy chip ball that Guzan just easily grabbed, or they just went wide of the posts or over the crossbar. I just didn't think Turkey was able to control that final ball, that final attempt to get the shot through.
Yeah, I mean, they were not very clinical in front of goal, and that's going to be something that, I mean, that may be part of the reason why they aren't playing in Brazil in a couple of weeks. I mean, you know, you look at the group they were in the qualifying. You know, Romania was all right, but you know, you look at that Romania, Hungary. I mean, the top team was the Dutch. Then you had Romania, Hungary, Turkey, Estonia, Andorra. You know, out of those, you think Turkey probably would have a decent shot to at least get that second spot, which would put them in a play-in, and they finished fourth out of that group. So, I mean, this is a team that, yes, they're better than Azerbaijan, but, you know, they are, I mean, but let's be honest, Azerbaijan, they actually finished fourth in their group. So, you know, it's easy to say that, you know, Turkey's a little bit different team. I mean, their club teams rank much better and have a better standing in Europe than Azerbaijan's do, obviously. I mean, you know, Bursaspor, Galatasaray, they're both, you know, pretty well-renowned. I mean, they're not in the elite clubs, but they're, you know, consistently in the Champions League talk and potentially you know, at the very least, you know, fighting their way through the Europa League towards the finals. So, you know, these are teams that are good. So, I mean, Turkey definitely has more clout. But, you know, they definitely need to get better in their finishing. They need to get better defending as well. You know, the defending that they did in this match wasn't particularly strong. So, a team, I have a feeling that, you know, the U.S. is going to get in a lot of trouble if they allow as much space as they did to Turkey to some of these other teams that they're going to be facing in the World Cup. It, you know, it could get really ugly. So,
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, and that's the one worry right now. Is the back line going to be tight enough to prevent those types of attacking runs, or are they going to be so loosey-goosey that it's basically a free-for-all for either Ghana, Portugal, or Germany? We'll have to wait and see. And just to go back with the qualifying, yes, Azerbaijan did finish in fourth place with 9 points in a group with Russia, who finished the top of the group, Portugal, that won their playoff against Sweden. Israel was in third, and the funny thing is Azerbaijan drew with Israel twice. While Azerbaijan got destroyed by Portugal 3-0 on September 11, 2012, and then 2-0 home against Portugal on March 26, 2013, against Russia. Russia basically won one draw when it was all over, really, because Russia automatically qualified and is top of the group, so that's not really a big thing right there. But, of course, with Russia facing Azerbaijan, it was a 1-0 victory in October 16th of 2012. So Azerbaijan finished fourth in their group play for qualifying. And then, as we said, for Turkey, they finished fourth with 13 points, while the Netherlands basically were undefeated with 9 wins and a draw. For their group, Romania went to the playoff against, I think, France, and they lost to France, obviously, but they had 19. This is really interesting, Earl. Netherlands has they do have a double the points that Romania earned to finish second with 19. And then Hungary finishes third with 17 points. Turkey finishes fourth with 13 points, and the only two sides that didn't do anything, Estonia, with only 2 wins for 7 points, and Andorra, who basically got destroyed and lost all 10 qualifiers. So, you know, that's a pretty strong group if you think about it, to qualify.
Yeah, well, but you look at the club's rankings, or the country's rankings, Turkey, around 33-ish, 38 at the moment. They're slowly moving back up, but... And Azerbaijan is like 85, so I mean, there definitely is quite a wide gap as far as their rankings in the FIFA sphere. But probably because Turkey made the Euros this past cycle, so and Azerbaijan obviously didn't. But it's definitely a Turkey's a better team than Azerbaijan. I'm not trying to argue that. I'm just saying that.
Of course.
They have some weaknesses, and obviously their two weaknesses were, a shoddy defense and an inability to convert they had a good number of chances in front of goal today, and if they have any kind of finishing prowess there, they get at least a goal out of that and maybe make this a draw. So, that's – I also thought the goalkeeper was kind of shoddy, too. I don't know why.
I agree.
kind of flubbed.
No, I agree.
He seemed to flub a couple things.
He looked shaky. No, I definitely agree with you. I thought he looked a little bit shaky as well. I didn't think he looked strong, and you are correct. Oh, Turkey, 39th in the FIFA World Rankings, 23rd in their UEFA rankings, so – Turkey, very strong and very, very tough to face. And if people are curious to know about Azerbaijan, they were ranked 85th in the world, 40th in UEFA rankings. So, Azerbaijan, not a real threat, obviously, but still, though, if they're decent in their zonal rankings, then obviously it is something to talk about. Meanwhile, for the United States, if you're curious to know about their rankings, they're 14th right now in the world, but they're number one in CONCACAF when it comes to the zonal rankings for the Confederation. So the United States is right now ahead of Mexico, who's ranked second after a disastrous qualifying campaign, even though they have to thank the USA's lucky stars that they were able to not just level with Panama in that final qualifying group match, but, of course, to beat Panama, to allow Mexico to play that that playoff against New Zealand. So, hey,
let's put this into perspective, though. So, Nigeria, the Super Eagles are ranked 45th. So, if you go by that, I mean, obviously teams have different abilities. Turkey, not going to the World Cup, probably didn't have their absolute number one team out there. Nigeria is probably going to have, or they'll definitely have their, if not their their final 23, you know, the out of that roster, they'll have out of the 30. I don't know if they have a provisional roster, if they have the, just their plain old 23. Ghana's at 38. So, you know, you have, you know, Nigeria and Ghana, similar rankings, similar, you know, you've even heard Jurgen Klinsmann say similar styles.
Mm-hmm.
Should be a good simulation for what they will face in Brazil, and I believe it's Natale, right? Is that there?
Yep.
No, or is it Manet? Yeah, Natale.
Natale, yep.
Yeah,
and then they
so
go to Manaus and, against Portugal.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's going to be, you know, it's getting real. It's getting down here close to time,
yeah.
Huh?
I can hear in your voice. You're ready. You got
ready.
The nerves going, my friend. You got the nerves ready. You know, here we go. It's only going to be, a little over a week now, a week and a couple of days before we go and kick it off down in Brazil, have a little samba of ourselves, having a little fun. Maybe we get those carnival dancers out there before they kick the ball off when Brazil begins this World Cup as the home nation. I mean, this is it, my friend. This is it. This is it's getting down to the nitty-gritty.
And great news from FIFA today about the or from actually, I think it's the Times of London. This Bin Hassan's been paying off, which I think everybody suspected. But
mm-hmm.
you know, from you know, in order to lobby for Qatar to win the 2022 World Cup, so lots of fun stuff going on right now in the world of FIFA, and I'm sure they're getting ready.
Absolutely.
Bat in the hatches, so to speak.
You know, this is really interesting because no matter how many times FIFA keeps on saying, yes, it was a mistake, yes, we were informed about the conditions, but still we have basically said that we're going to stay committed to Qatar, even though they never really said that. They kept on saying it in their own way that they're going to keep the World Cup in Qatar, and we say when a World Cup will be made. And you know what? All I can say is this. If FIFA is going to be forced to make a switch to another country, then, look, the jig is up. They're going to have to get out of Qatar. And I'm not saying I did not want the World Cup in Qatar. I wouldn't mind seeing one of those nations actually hosting the World Cup. But if the conditions are that brutal, and we have to think about player safety, fan safety for those people going into Qatar to build these stadiums, these so-called special air conditioning stadiums and an open roof and everything, then it has to be taken away, Earl. I mean, look, bring it to the United States if they want. You could bring it to Australia if they want. At least whoever finished second and third in that voting to host a World Cup in 2002, at least give those countries a chance to get it revoted.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really don't think – I mean, I don't think I ever wanted to see it in Qatar. No offense to the Qatari people. I'm sure, you know, they've been allies for us in the past as far as trying to, you know, in our efforts to, you know, try to, you know, control Saddam Hussein, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that we've been based there and whatnot. But, you know, this is – you know, this is serious business, and I mean, there's a lot of money getting thrown around here, and a lot of people are going to be making money, and it's not the people who are losing their lives building these stadiums. And you know, you have the potential to lose lives at the event if you're going to hold it in the summer. And you know, why you would bid for an event to be held in summer when all you think you're going to do is possibly move it to winter? That's just it's not right. So.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens, but I, you know, FIFA will never. It won't surprise me if nothing happens.
We'll see what FIFA does, and who knows? It might be a surprise. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this special review show here as the USA defeat Turkey by a final of 2-1. Join Earl Reed and I this coming Saturday as we do a post-game show after USA faces Nigeria. And for Earl Reed, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening. Enjoy your football, and let's see what happens with the USA. Bye-bye for now.